Hey there, everybody. Welcome again to Jazz United. This is Greg Bryant, host of Jazz After Hours on WBGO.
And I'm Nate Chenin, the editorial director at WBGO.
We like to come together and chat about things going on in our music community and generally just what's on our minds. And today, we want to talk about the Grammy Awards.
The nominations are in for the 63rd Grammy Awards, which will be held on January 31st, in some virtual capacity. I think the details are forthcoming there, but it's going to be broadcast on CBS. And, you know, I think you probably feel the same way I do, Greg, which is that, you know, these lists arrive and there's cause for celebration.
Right.
And then there's also maybe a little room for ambivalence. So
yeah,
we're going to sort of puzzle our way through that here on this episode of Jazz United.
Sure. I mean, you know, what is a Grammy? What's in a Grammy? For musicians, you know, Grammys are sometimes a way for better performance conditions, better fees. You know, Grammy-nominated, Grammy-winning so-and-so simply means that you can get your price up. But, you know, that's arguable in these days and times. And with no gigs, you know, this year, that definitely isn't a factor.
And it's worth thinking about what this is recognition for, right?
Yeah.
Is this a barometer of quality? Is it an acknowledgement of dominance? One of the interesting storylines in the hours after the nominations were announced came out of the pop area, where The Weeknd, who has, you know, been more or less unavoidable on streaming services and in pop culture, he called out the Grammys for the fact that he didn't have a single nomination, and said that the Grammys and the Academy were, quote, corrupt. And I'm sure that he has dispatched a team of lawyers to the Michigan Election Board. but, you know, we're going to talk about that. Are the Grammys fundamentally suspect? Is the way that these decisions are made something that we should raise an eyebrow at as it pertains to the jazz field? I don't know if we have a simple answer, but, well, you know, we'll get somewhere with it.
You know, everyone talks about Chick Corea. You know, and 23 wins and 67 nominations, and his album Trilogy 2, which, oh man, it's a stellar record. It's been one of my favorite Chick albums of recent, with Christian McBride and Ryan Blade, live trio CD. That's been nominated for Best Instrumental Jazz Album and Best Improvised Solo. And again, you know, we're looking at these statistics. Even Blade and McBride on this, they've got another 9 wins and 24 noms between them. So, you know, is this a coup? You know, I don't like to think of it like that. But, you know, where are the young upstarts that can really have a shot and chance at this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there is some good news in that respect, and we'll get to that. But before we do, I just want to acknowledge what I sometimes jokingly refer to as the Chick Corea rule, which is that if Chick has an album out, he will be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a subclause to that rule, which is that if he is nominated, there is a, you know, better than fair chance that he will win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Grammys have their favorites. You know, they're just people who are sort of anointed. And Chick is absolutely one of those. And I think that from that, you know, the following generation, we've seen that our friends McBride and Blade are definitely in that circle as well.
Right.
And in fact, they're elsewhere in the nominations this year. I know, Greg, you like this album as much as I do. The reunited Joshua Redman quartet, the mood swing quartet of the mid-90s with Blade, McBride, Redman, and pianist Brad Meldow. They released an album this year called Round Again, and it's up also for Best Instrumental Jazz Album. And Redman has a solo up in that category. And I thought maybe it's time to hear some music. So why don't we drop in on Joshua Redman's tenor solo on this blazing tune he wrote called Mo Honk. We'll be right back.
Again, that was Mohunk from the brand new Joshua Redman, Brad Meldow, Christian McBride, and Brian Blade disc, Round Again. Man, Redman is blazing on this. Everybody is. You know, it's hard to really designate who has the best solo on this album, because right. everybody is just so much in their element. It's really been a bright moment to hear these guys back together again. But Nate, we were just talking about the general idea of, as you say, the Grammy overdog, you mm-hmm. know, Chick Corea. You can make a case for Herbie Hancock and Pat Metheny in that same line of thinking. But what is the real downside? You know, sometimes there's this disconnect that I feel between what is celebrated overtly, our legends, as they deservingly need to be celebrated. But the people who are in the streets, in the clubs, making the music, raising the eyebrows for this generation, mm-hmm. it just feels like an uphill battle. And I don't know even as much evening out as the Grammys says they're trying to do, if that justice is really being served.
Well, there's a couple things to tease apart there, right? And number one, I think we should both say that we're not against our elders and our legends.
Not at all.
Collecting their garlands.
Not at all.
And when we have an album like Trilogy 2, which really is a superb outing by Chick Corea, I think it's deservedly in that list. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's been justly recognized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the same is often true of, you know, when we see an award go to Herbie, when we see an award go to Metheny, you know. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be grudging about that.
No.
But it is also true that there is a fixed number of spots here. And so, you know, when someone like Chick with his, you know, how many wins did we say? Almost two mm-hmm. dozen Grammys so
yeah.
far.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's recognized, it means that there's someone who is, you know, quite likely deserving who's not getting that spot. And it makes it all the more heartening and impressive, I think, when you see someone manage to claw their way in there. And,
right.
and this year, in the Best Instrumental Jazz Album category, that person is trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusri. Who released, you know, what for me is easily one of the top three jazz albums released this year, called On the Tender Spot of Every Calloused Moment. It's really cool to see Ambrose receive that recognition for the first time. You know, I wouldn't put money on him winning, but it's a nice acknowledgement, right? And again, there's a certain feeling that the cards are stacked against someone coming in there for the first time.
That's true, Nate. I think it's good to mention here, too, in the nominating process, what happens is that, you know, Recording Academy members can vote up to 15 categories, and they're encouraged to vote on categories that they have knowledge or expertise in. So, you know, somebody like me, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be voting in a country Western category.
Greg, you're from Nashville, man.
That's true. This is true. But I can't really call myself an expert. Maybe Americana, but I'm just not the country expert. I really think, though, that when you see a name that you recognize, how hard are these ballots being scrutinized? Because if someone who is in adjacent field of jazz, such as, you know, contemporary instrumental music or arranging, they know the name Chick Corea. They don't know Ambrose Akinmusri.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not Ambrose's fault. His art is great. It deserves celebration. But again, maybe we all have an agenda or a desire or even a calling to help promote and push certain young musicians who we find artistically excellent. Calling someone's name is still valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still valuable in raising the consciousness for things like this. And again, as we're pointing out, this is not a judge on necessarily artistic merit. This is still a political process
right.
in many regards.
Well, you know, we should probably take a moment here to mention who else is in this category of Best Jazz Instrumental Album, because mm-hmm. it's an interesting balance of people. So we've mm-hmm. mentioned Ambrose, we've mentioned Chick, and we've mentioned Redman, Meldow, McBride, Blade. The two other albums in the category are by pianist Gerald Clayton
mm-hmm.
for Happening, Live at the Village Vanguard.
Yeah.
Really great album. Mm-hmm. And for Terry Lynn Carrington and Social Science for her album Waiting Game. And,
yes.
You know, I would argue that Terry Lynn Carrington has become like Christian McBride. You know, she is one of those people who the Grammys now will turn to. You know, mm-hmm. she's won several. She is an artist who understands how to put together a project that feels, you know, that carries a certain importance,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Waiting Game, this album, is absolutely, it fits the bill in more than one way. And I would not be surprised, and I would be quite happy if this is the album that ends up winning.
Ah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Absolutely, Nate. I think that, again, as you mentioned, you know, Terry Lynn Carrington breaking through just maybe, you know, 7 years ago or so for the first time with that Mosaic album that she released. Mm-hmm. You know, now the folks that vote on the Recording Academy, they know this name. You know, they recognize, you know, Terry Lynn Carrington. Oh, maybe I should be on the lookout when she does, you know, a new project. And that's the grooming process that you're kind of alluding to, you know, adjacent to jazz, even if I can mention, you know, a name like Jacob Collier, having several wins for arranging, now being nominated this year in the Best Album category. There's definitely a grooming process that happens and mm-hmm. a familiarity with your first nomination and first win.
The Recording Academy likes to sort of crown someone at a certain point.
Okay.
And then return and keep returning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've seen that in other fields. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody gets Best New Artist and then they become a Grammy perennial. A recent example would be H.E.R.
Her's Bad, man.
This is mm-hmm. this is someone who I think has a much larger platform through the sort of Grammy realm
right.
than she does in popular culture.
Right.
You know, like that is a Grammy artist in a certain way. And when I say that, you know, the Academy likes to reward a certain set of values, right? Which happen to be really compatible with, you know, our improvising artists and the jazz community, you know.
But let's look at something, though, Nate. There's a situation where, again, and you mentioned the artist Her, and as well as Jacob Collier, you know, these folks were technically brilliant, but they also had a huge social media quotient. Going into their early recording careers. I don't know, and I stand corrected, but I don't know of a jazz artist that has broken out as a social media phenom first. Normally, our proving ground is, you know, in the clubs, on the concert stage, you know, having a stellar album, maybe even with people that are more recognizable than the debut artist to help that clout build.
Well, this goes to the idea of what you're calling jazz, because mm-hmm. I would argue that we have a few examples of that,
mm.
but they're by artists that maybe are, you know, one step out of the circle, right?
Okay.
So I'm thinking of Lewis Cole, who is, you know, drummer, producer, vocalist, just a hilarious dude. And is he a jazz musician? I don't know. He certainly collaborates with jazz musicians, including Brad Meldow, and, you know, but what he does is part of this brain feeder nexus, you know, that includes Thundercat and
yeah.
Flying Lotus. And, you know, there's something happening there
mm-hmm.
That is jazz contingent. But I mean, if you were to stop the average listener to WBGO and mm-hmm. try to strike up a conversation about Lewis Cole, I don't know how far you'd get.
Yeah.
Unless his name is Simon Rentner.
I hear what you mean.
But, you know, that raises the idea of the creep of improvising artists into these other categories, right? So you mentioned Jacob Collier, mm-hmm. Who has nominations, you know, definitely a coup for him to be popping up in Album of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's also got nominations in composing and arranging categories.
Right.
And then I was really interested to see that Christian Scott, Tunde Adjua.
Yes.
His album Axiom, which was recorded live at the Blue Note, basically just as the city was shutting down back in March.
Mm-hmm.
It's been nominated for Best Contemporary Instrumental Album. And he's also got a Best Improvised Jazz Solo nomination for his work on one of those, you know, sort of familiar tunes that I think Grammy voters probably perked up when they saw. This is David Crosby's Guinevere. You know, the astute jazz listener knows was also covered by Miles Davis.
Right.
So maybe let's toss it to Christian and hear some Guinevere now. What do you think?
Exciting. Let's go for it.
So, Greg, you said go for it. I think Christian Scott is going for it on this track.
Oh, man.
He's uncorked.
It's crazy that he chose this tune. When I found Circle in the Round, the album that was released on Miles Davis Extras, basically, mm-hmm. Guinevere was on this from the Miles version from 1970. It was basically recorded right after the Bitches Brew sessions. So, basically, it didn't make the deadline for the album. But I heard Miles's version and I'm like, T.O., man, you made a mistake. Mm. You should have put this one out on that record because it would have been a super smash. And yeah. To have somebody like Christian resonate with this tune and do his own thing with it, it's still in that Miles vocabulary, but there's something else going on here. And again, as we talked about with the Meldow, McBride, and Blade, all of the solos on this joint are super hot. Mm-hmm. How do you decide that Christian took the best? He certainly was out front with it, but this performance in general is just mind-bogglingly good.
Like, well, you know, I think that one answer to your question is that the nominations are a result of a submission process, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so someone in Christian's camp or someone involved with, I think this album's out on Ropadope, right?
It is.
Someone from the label or someone from his management, you know, decided, okay, here's what we're going to submit. And mm-hmm. I think there was some very savvy calculation there because mm-hmm. there are other just smashing solos on this album, Axiom.
Yeah.
But they chose a tune that isn't his. They chose a tune that would potentially resonate with people like yourself who mm-hmm. have, you know, deep feelings about Miles's version and Miles's engagement with the tune, and also potentially people who just love David Crosby.
That's right.
And remember the original. You know, it's worth noting that the Chick Corea solo that's nominated is for his work on All Blues.
All Blues, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a little bit of like, okay, we know that that we need to, you know, sprinkle a little sugar on this to get people's attention. And yeah. I think, you know, we'll see where it goes. But what do you make of the larger point of Axiom being submitted outside the jazz categories? Because we've seen more and more of this, mm-hmm. I feel. You know, he's not the only notable artist who is in that best contemporary instrumental right. album category this year.
I think it's great. I think more of it should happen.
Interesting. So why is that?
Well, in general, I think, again, the so-called jazz category is a bit narrow. Mm-hmm. I think the word jazz is narrow. I've had problems with it for several years, and that's another episode. But I really feel like in general, you mentioned Lewis Cole earlier, Jacob Collier earlier, even what Robert Glasper is doing now, Gregory Porter. A lot of these albums are jazz adjacent, but may not be, you know, tipping, 1-2-3-4 swinging, or solo head solo form. You know, there's something else at play here, and that contemporary instrumental category mm-hmm. I think is embracing of many more visions that are improvising categories perhaps, but not in that narrow field. It allows a lot more voices to come through.
Yeah. I hear you, but I have a counterpoint.
Come on.
So as we mentioned, Gerald Clayton is up in the best instrumental jazz album category for mm-hmm. Happening, Live mm-hmm. at the Village Vanguard. In Best Contemporary Instrumental Album, we have Chronology of a Dream, live at the Village Vanguard, by a certain John Batiste.
Yeah.
Now, these are two albums recorded in the same room.
Right.
With a very similar spirit by two pianists who both understand swing deeply. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But aren't afraid to branch outside of it. So you have a real, what I think is a real A-B comparison here. I mean, these two albums speak to each other. I think they're both great. So why is John Batiste's effort in the contemporary instrumental music category? Is it because he's too big for jazz? You know what I mean? Like, Christian Scott, Atunde Ajwa, and John Batiste are in this category, along with Snarky Puppy, for what it's worth. And it almost makes me feel like it's because they have the clout or something to escape the jazz ghetto.
Yeah.
Is that a fair read?
I'm not sure, but I follow your logic. I feel like even somebody like Gerald Clayton would do fine in the other category, the best contemporary instrumental. Again, I think it's a nomenclature thing, but it's also a conception of, you know, where a person is in their career that may or may not be justified, because you make the point they're equally as lethal on the piano. They're killer players.
Yeah.
But the conception sometimes has been different. Look at Jonathan Batiste's albums, you know, with the Stay Human band. You know, they definitely branch out a little bit more than, you know, strictly improvisational music. They do have some pop leanings. I'm sure Gerald Clayton has that ability. Maybe we just haven't seen that album, you know, come out yet.
Yeah, you know, I think you mentioned Robert Glasper earlier. You know, he's kind of a great case study here because there was a conscious decision to submit his album Black Radio for Best R&B Album rather than Best Jazz Album. And it paid off not once but twice, and has continued to pay off since. And in fact, Glasper has two nominations in the R&B field this year.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to me to see Gregory Porter follow suit, right? And Gregory is also a Blue Note artist, but Gregory's album All Rise is in the Best R&B Album category alongside efforts by John Legend and Luke James. And I think he's actually got pretty decent odds.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain preference that the Academy gives to the kind of musical excellence that Gregory Porter represents, right?
True.
But it's interesting to me because what does it mean? Is there a downside to Gregory vying in that category rather than being the big fish in the Best Jazz Vocal Album category? I don't know the answer to that myself, but it's something to think about.
I don't either. But again, the folks at labels who submit their artists definitely have a game plan. You know, we'll never know. But as I alluded to much earlier, a lot of times the cloud of winning or being nominated in what's perceived as a bigger category, you know, sometimes that means a bigger payday. Sometimes that means, you know, a bigger opportunity in other ways. So I don't think that move to nominate Gregory in R&B did not have a plan or a purpose.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, it rings of four-dimensional chess or something. there's a mind at work there for sure. You know, as we talk about categories outside the jazz field, but still very very pertinent to the jazz conversation, we've got to talk about the composition and arranging categories. And it's interesting because this sort of speaks to the idea that within popular music, because, you know, classical has its own composing categories.
Right.
So when we talk about composing and arranging, it's kind of like everything but classical, right? And it's always interesting to note that this has effectively become a jazz category, like by default. So the best instrumental composition, I'll read the nominees this year. Strata by Remy LeBouf. Sputnik by Maria Schneider, who is also up for Best Large Ensemble. Plumfield by Alexandra Desplat, film composer. Be Water 2 by pianist Christian Sands. And Baby Jack by Arturo O'Farrell from an album with his Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Mm-hmm. This is a really diverse bunch of pieces, and they're all deserving, but it's like, I don't know exactly what the criteria is. I'd be curious to see how this plays out, you know?
Right. According to the Grammy website, the instrumental composition is known as a composer's award for an original composition, not an adaptation, first released during the eligibility year, singles or tracks only. So it's basically one tune that's an original and not an arrangement. So that's not a huge measure of detail.
Yeah, are we talking about melody? Are we talking about texture? Is it formal innovation? You know, it's really open to debate. And, you know, so again, we'll see.
Right.
But why don't we let our listeners be the judge for a moment here? As I said, Baby Jack is from an Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra album. It was composed by Arturo O'Farrell. It's the opening track from their album Four Questions, which is also up for Best Latin Jazz Album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a ride. There's a lot going on in this one.
Yeah.
So let's parachute into Baby Jack.
That was Baby Jack by Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Again, they've got two noms this year. Arturo does Best Instrumental Composition, as well as Best Latin Jazz Album. And this Latin Jazz album field is pretty hot this year too, Nate.
It is. And you know, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra has won before. Arturo has won before. And so I think you can probably say that they are coming in with an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, as we look at the nominees, and I'll read them off quickly. Tradiciones by the Afro-Peruvian Jazz Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Four Questions, which we've mentioned. City of Dreams by Chico Pinero.
Mm-hmm.
Viento y Tiempo, live at Blue Note Tokyo, by Gonzalo Rubalcaba and Aime Nuviola.
Right.
And finally, Train's Delight by Pancho Sanchez.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I look at this, I would guess that Arturo is kind of the front runner, but there's a pretty strong challenge coming from Pancho Sanchez. First of all, because this album is really, really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very satisfying listen, and you know the band sounds tight and they're firing on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also interpreting the music of John Coltrane.
That's right.
And as we've seen and as we've discussed, that is a winning move.
It is.
You hear this band playing Liberia, or you know, digging into Blue Train,
mm-hmm.
that's scratching an itch, and it's mm-hmm. also showing you something new. And I feel like the Academy will probably reward that.
I think they will. This album has done well at jazz radio this year too.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're talking about that name recognition, and you know, Pancho working all the time, you know, pre-COVID. He is definitely going to run in this category as hard as he can, and I wouldn't be surprised if he or Arturo make the final cut.
And unlike the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, I think that this is the first album by Pancho Sanchez in something like 7 years.
Mm.
So there's also that to factor in. You know, sometimes the Academy likes to reward a return.
Right.
So we'll see. You know, it's been interesting to me to think about the Latin jazz category, and at times thinking about, well, where do we draw those distinctions, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was a year or two ago that Miguel Zenon had a really fabulous album out with the Spectral String Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And it landed in some some categories. I think it was honored in the Latin jazz category. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Miguel Zenon doesn't operate within a Latin jazz framework necessarily.
Right.
And I think that's true. That's often true of Arturo O'Farrell. Mm-hmm. You know, it's true of many artists who I think get coded into this Latin jazz category. And I don't know, I feel I'm happy that it exists, but I also sometimes feel a little ambivalent about, you know, well, why isn't it like a really superlative Latin jazz album by someone like the Argentine pianist and composer Guillermo Klein? Should that be in Latin jazz or should that be in the main jazz category, you know?
Well, you raise a point there, Nate, and it's something that I've thought about outside of the Grammys.
Yeah.
Should our music have its own awards? There is not a lot of opportunity for recognition beside a handful of categories at the Grammys, you know, for, you know, creative, improvised, and vocal music. And I've been thinking about a long time, should we have our own awards system, not to separate us further, but to recognize us more?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are the Jazz Journalists Awards, mm-hmm. I participate in that. I'm a voter. Mm-hmm. I've been quite fortunate to be the recipient of some awards from them. But, you know, again, it goes back to this inevitable truth, which is that the Grammys matter. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this clout that the Grammys still carry, and it really does speak to a kind of industry consensus and a kind of ratification of, you know, who carries the clout, right?
Yeah.
And to that end, someone pointed out, you know, when I posted the Best Instrumental Jazz Album nominees on Twitter, mm-hmm. I noted that it was a pretty, you know, a pretty respectable bunch of albums. And I posed the innocent question, what's missing here?
Mm-hmm.
And the most interesting response I got was from someone who said, any album by an independent label, like Greenleaf or Pi Recordings, they named a couple of others.
Mm-hmm.
But that's I thought that was a really astute point, because
yeah.
so much of the music that matters to us
mm-hmm.
that comes out in a given year
right.
is being released by labels other than Concord and
that's
Luna
true.
And Impulse and Verve, right?
Yeah.
So that does feel like a pretty notable omission there. And so when there is an exception to that, it's worth applauding. So the album I'm thinking of is Ona by Thana Alexa, great jazz vocalist. And this was something that she put together. It was really kind of a big endeavor for her. There were a lot of guests. But, you know, this is an independent album.
Right.
And it earned her a nomination in Best Jazz Vocal Album,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really big deal, you know, for someone without a big machine behind her.
Right.
And it also yielded a Best Solo nomination for Regina Carter, exceptional violinist.
Sure.
And I, you know, who knows, but I suspect that having the likes of Regina Carter on this album,
mm-hmm.
You know, that was really crucial to the acceptance that it met with in the Academy. You
right.
know, there's a certain sort of cosign there.
Absolutely. You know, Thana brings up a great point in consideration, and just like her, I would like to mention the Baylor Project,
mm-hmm.
Marcus and Jean Baylor.
Yeah.
They were nominated for Best Traditional R&B Song for their single that came out this year. Again, independent artists. They've been nominated before, actually. This is their second year
right.
That they've been nominated. And that speaks to the point of, again, knowing, you know, how to, I don't want to say play the game, but knowing how to reach out and engage and participate. You know, one person can't make a Grammy nomination by themselves. So, you know, if the smaller labels were as interested, they could amass, you know, teams to be able to, you know, help with votes for certain artists. Because
mm-hmm.
again, this isn't an artistic judgment. This is a political process, love it or hate it. You know, that's what this is. So I think there's a bravado. And I understand it as a musician, you know, who cares about the Grammys on one hand, you know,
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, you know, let's be smart. And in our effort to get our music to the greatest number of people possible, you know, let's participate in this Grammy process. I
right.
see both arguments.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a good way of putting it. And going back to that idea of independent labels, I think it's worth pointing out that in this Best Jazz Vocal Album category, because Gregory Porter decided to get airlifted into R&B, we have, I think, every album here is an independent effort. So in addition to Ona by Thana Alexa, we have Secrets Are the Best Stories by sort of former major label artists, Kurt Elling and Danilo Perez. This album was put out by the British label Edition, which has been doing, you know, really great work, but, you know, remains an independent label. Modern Ancestors, an album by Carmen Lundy.
Right.
Holy Room, Live at Alte Oper by Somi with the Frankfurt Radio Big Band. And What's the Hurry, a very aptly titled album by Kenny Washington, not the drummer. The singer.
The singer, right. This is his first album, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. See, so there are a lot of like really sort of can-do stories here. And some of, you know, in some cases, you know, as with Carmen Lundy and Kurt Elling, these are people who have had the benefit of major label exposure in the past.
Right.
But, you know, everybody's just making it work however they can. And the labels are as plucky as the artists in some cases.
They have to be. Yeah, it's a process, again, where if you know how to get a nomination through, you know that. And I don't hear as many people willing to share that information. But, you know, it's not some, you know, super underworld as maybe we all once thought. We're seeing some indies come through and really show themselves as nominees and winners too in some cases. And it's encouraging to see, again, independent artists and independent labels push through on such a stage like this.
All right, so before we bring this home, Greg, I gotta ask, everyone talks about snubs with the Grammys, right? It's not just The Weeknd who complains. And from my armchair vantage, you know, I've done it myself. And so I wonder, I guess, these may be two different answers for you. What's the album that you really expected to see here, but it's not anywhere on the list? And what's the album that you wish personally were here, but isn't?
Honestly, I expected to see Aaron Deal's record, The Vagabond, this list. It's a great record with a great ensemble. Enough said about that. We're going to see Aaron Deal, I think, in the future on these awards. And then maybe the album that didn't make it that I wish would have been on here. I'm a huge fan of that Charles Tolliver record, man. We've talked about it in an earlier episode. I feel like there should be room from an established master who makes a recording with one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I think that album really did that for me this year. And I hope people keep listening to it and keep talking about it.
Yeah. Those are both good picks. I'm going to submit a couple of my own, and I feel like you could switch the order of these, you know, and it would still make sense. But one album that I expected to see, I'm surprised not to see, is Source by Nubia Garcia. You know, this is a really strong debut. It's received a ton of critical acclaim and a lot of love from audiences. It is her major label debut. It's on Concord Jazz. I think it was released within the eligibility window. And so it speaks to that idea of like, well, she's over in London. Maybe she doesn't have people who are, you know, pulling the right levers over here. But yeah, that to me felt like a surprising thing. And I think this is one of those cases where the Grammys are just going to be a couple of steps behind, and Nubia will release her second album and it'll probably pop up. And then the other one for me is Lakeisha Benjamin's Pursuance, the Coltranes. And, you know, this to me has, and I this will sound disparaging and I really don't mean it that way, this to me has Grammy album all over it, you know, in the sense that she is dealing with music that we recognize. She has brought in an incredible all-star cast. You know, it's similar to Terry Lynn's Mosaic project in that respect. She's got elders and peers and contemporaries, you know. It's a real event record, and, you know, I can't imagine the amount of hustle that it took to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have, you know, this album was not released on a major label, and she doesn't have the kind of machine behind it, and for whatever reason, it didn't get a nomination. I think that's a real oversight.
I do too. That's a good call. And even seeing them in action earlier this year at Winter Jazz Fest solidified for me just how important this gathering, this album project is. Mm-hmm. But again, I think we're going to see Miss Benjamin in subsequent nomination years. She's becoming a force.
Oh, yeah.
She is one already.
Undeniable. But... undeniable. So why don't we end on some good news? We've already mentioned it, but... Ona by Thana Alexa. This is, you know, this is a really deserving effort that is, to me, it was a real pleasant surprise to see it in this category.
Yeah, it was.
And an indication of what happens when the industry kind of decides to take notice. You know, she was on the cover of Downbeat with her husband, Antonio Sanchez, earlier this year. I think there's just a real acknowledgement of what she's doing. And like Lakeisha's Coltrane album, Ona is, you know, full of guests and really was stitched together by Thana's vision. So I was thinking maybe we should hear the track that features Regina Carter, because this is a double nominated track here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Pachamama.
Yeah. Pachamama was the tune featuring an amazing solo from violinist Regina Carter. That's got a double nomination this year, Best Jazz Vocal Album, and the solo in that song is nominated for Best Improvised Solo.
I would not be mad if she takes it.
Oh, man. It's a good choice, right?
It's just a transcendent solo, and Regina mm-hmm. Regina just knows how to, you know, take flight.
Yeah.
She's like a kite in high wind on that one.
Good choice.
Greg, are you going to watch the Grammys?
You know, I probably will, but I always watch the pre-telecast because mm-hmm. that's right. The one that really has the categories relevant to what we talk about.
Yeah.
I'm going
and
to try
performances.
To...
performances.
That's
that pre-telecast,
true.
I mean,
true.
I remember
yeah.
seeing Jasmia Horn just...
Oh,
you know,
didn't she kill?
Oh, man, that was...
She killed.
It's really funny because that's what the Grammys used to be, is mm-hmm. like the actual distribution of awards and then like real musical performances.
yeah.
You know, this is a real sort of burying the lead kind of moment. But I do want to take this moment. If you've made it this far in our podcast, thank you for hanging. But I want to take this moment to just issue a blanket congratulations to everyone who was Grammy nominated. You know, we've been sort of taking our scalpel out and trying to slice up the process a bit. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that getting this recognition for really any one of these artists is a real achievement, and my hat's off to everyone.
Right. And I'll go even deeper than that. You know, if, you know, the award isn't under your name, but you played on a record or you produced a record or what have you, props to you too, because we often, you know, don't think about the folks that work so tirelessly on all these albums. You know, it's more than just a one-person job.
I'm going to lobby to create a category called Best Comping Behind a Soloist.
Let's get it. What do we have to talk to?
Micah Thomas would have it this year, I think.
Okay. Folks, we do want to take time out to say, if you listen to this podcast or check out WBGO in any fashion, just know that we are a listener-supported station. That means that we exist because of you, okay? If you are not yet a WBGO member and would like to become one, or would like to give to contribute to ensure that we remain doing just what we do, go to wbgo.org/support. Learn more and make your financial contribution securely right there.
This has been Jazz United, a podcast from WBGO, hosted by me, Grammy observant Nate Chenin, and Grammy adjacent Greg Bryant. Our producer is Sarah Kirsten. Our senior producer is Simon Rentner. Please listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends. Subscribe. You can also find our show page at wbgo.org.